The Omnibus Appropriations Bill Congress passed last month includes some major plus-ups in the funding lines the military uses to pay for upkeep of its facilities. But even though the amounts are larger, they're still not nearly enough to fund all of the maintenance DOD needs. In some cases, facilities will continue to deteriorate. In others, the military is just treading water. Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu examines the numbers as part of this week's DOD Reporter's Notebook. And Jared, it looks as if you're reporting, even though the numbers are up, it's still not enough.
They are up, and we'll go through them real quick here. It really is a pretty significant increase compared to what Congress passed in 2017, 58% more than the prior year's numbers. In 17, they provided $6.2 billion. In 2018, in the bill, as you said, that they just passed, it's $9.8 billion, almost $9.9 billion. So a really significant jump. The increases vary pretty widely by the military service. The biggest percentage increase by far went to the Air Force. Theirs is up 102% compared to 2017. Up to $3.4 billion for 2018. And then you get numbers down as low as 26% for the Navy, which got $2.1 billion for 2018. But in every one of these cases, as you said, Tom, it's not going to be nearly enough to pay for all of the base maintenance expenses that the military needs to conduct, even in 2018 alone. This is based, I'm making that claim based on DOD's own numbers. They have something called the Facility Condition Index, which is something developed by the Office of the Secretary of Defense, which basically forecasts how much money each of the military services would need to spend in any given year in order to really do all the maintenance on the entire inventory of facilities that they have. Over the past few years, they've been spending roughly in the mid-70% amount. This year, they all targeted 80% of all the maintenance that they need to do for 2018. So that tells you they're still not spending nearly enough. That's another case where it varies by military service. The Air Force acknowledges in its 2019 budget, for example, that it's going to, as they say, take risk in this area, allow some facilities to continue to deteriorate so they can put O&M money, operation and maintenance money, against other more critical readiness needs. The Navy, on the other hand, is saying that 80% figure is going to be enough to let them start to dig out of the massive facility maintenance backlog that they have. In their case, it's $14.3 billion worth of backlogged projects. This is going to allow them, assuming they sustain this level of funding year after year, to dig out of that backlog at a rate of $300 million per year. But when you look at the ratios and do the math, it would take 48 years for them to completely dig out of the backlog that they have as of now, assuming, again, that they're able to fund this at this 80% rate.
Yeah, so if they keep funding at 80%, 80%, 70%, 70%, pretty soon they have 100% they haven't done. The question is, does this lack of maintenance long-term have an adverse effect on the equipment that these facilities house, and therefore even more profound readiness problems?
It's hard to make a generalizable statement about that because DOD owns so many different kinds of infrastructure. But what we do know is that anywhere between 20% and 25%, as a general matter, of the military services facilities are already in poor or failing condition. So there's a few different ways you can deal with that. Back to the Navy again, for instance, the reason they're able to make progress against their backlog while only funding FSRM at an 80% rate is that some of that money is going to go toward entirely demolishing buildings that are just not worth saving anymore. So that will reduce their facility footprint a little bit and avoid some of the most expensive maintenance that you have to do when buildings are really in completely failing condition. But to your question, I think the answer is undoubtedly yes. In some cases, it's a safety risk for people who are working in these facilities, although obviously they try to minimize that as much as possible. But, you know, let's say you're talking about a facility that provides depot maintenance. If it unexpectedly goes offline because, I don't know, a critical piece of equipment breaks down or a roof collapses, that obviously would have pretty significant knock-on effects to whatever piece of equipment or military hardware that depot was supposed to be maintaining.
We're speaking with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu. And in a related issue, they're not talking about base realignment and closure. I guess they gave up on that one altogether. So if they tear down certain buildings that are not used or beyond repair, they could create a lot of space for themselves that doesn't cost anything to maintain. It'll just be, what, concrete foundations left over?
Yeah, that's right. And I think each of the military services has been doing some of this, either demolishing these structures or placing them in mothball status. And I think you're probably seeing more of that mothball approach because, of course, it costs money to do demolition on an entire structure. But yeah, you're right. DOD, for the first time in years, did not request another round of base realignments and closures in 2019 in their 2019 budget, which was kind of a curious decision. This omnibus bill that we've been talking about that provided this extra funding does give some glimmer of opportunity for DOD to get rid of some of its excess facility infrastructure. It's about 19% more than they need, by the way, as of right now. The bill would basically give each of the military services orders to come up with a plan for selling some of their real estate by September. It would not close any bases. It would keep the existing fence lines of each military base intact, but they could sell off some of this excess infrastructure. But there's severe restrictions on that approach that the appropriators put in. They're only allowed to recommend the divestiture of property if it's already completely unoccupied, already completely unused, and if it's been unoccupied and unused for 5 years in a row.
All right, and I wanted to switch gears totally with you for a moment to something else I found interesting in the notebook this week, and that is the new acquisition official at the Army is saying that the Army's treatment of vendors' intellectual property needs to be shored up.
Yeah, this is interesting. This is Dr. Bruce Jetty, who's now the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Acquisition, Logistics, and Technology. He was sworn in just last month, and this is obviously one of his first priorities. He says the way that both government and industry have been treating IP over the past few years has just gotten really messy. And what he means is that a vendor, for example, will come to the Army and say, I have this underlying piece of intellectual property that's really going to improve your mission, but it needs to be integrated with some Army system or some series of Army systems. So integration work happens. The vendor takes some piece of DoD's intellectual property and vice versa to weave all of these systems together, and by the time you get a finished product, it's not really clear which party owns which pieces of intellectual property, which makes it really difficult to disentangle and move on to another vendor at some point if you need to. So basically the approach he wants to take is, the way he put it, is all of the vendor's IP goes in a black box. He doesn't want to know what's in the black box. He doesn't want to know how it works. He wants to see the functionality that it produces. And right next to that is a black box with all of DoD's intellectual property. So it's very clear who owns what, much easier to disentangle at the point that you actually need to do that. And then the Army would pay licensing fees to that company for anything that they don't want to sell, any of their intellectual property that they want to retain the rights to on an unlimited and indefinite basis, rather than asking them to sell it to the government. So slightly interesting approach, slightly different approach than I think the Army's been taking in the past few years, and it's going to be interesting to see how it works out.
Well, if they're going to work with all these Silicon Valley and non-traditional and startup companies, then they're going to need to get that right, because that's important to those companies. Basically, their main asset is their intellectual property.
Yeah, that's right. And I will say one other point on intellectual property that Mr. Jetty mentioned is he really wants to tackle a little bit of how the government deals with IP as part of the bid and proposal process. One of the issues that he brought up in his speech at the Association of the U.S. Army in Huntsville last week is that too often there are these private discussions between an Army program office and a vendor, where the vendor's sort of describing the unique innovations that they can bring to the table. And then almost, I won't say accidentally, but there's this sort of subliminal brain process that the government goes through where they say, oh, okay, let's ask for that in an RFP. That's something that pretty much everybody should be able to think of. I could have thought of that. And then it ends up where this vendor's unique innovation ends up exposed to the public, much to their chagrin. Same thing in the RFI process. He wants to find a way for vendors to be able to ask questions of the government during the course of a given procurement without having to expose that question and the answer to that question in a public forum, which is usually what happens when you're doing a Q&A through the traditional RFP process.
Always a delicate dance. Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu, thanks so much.
You bet.
Be sure to check out his notebook now online at federalnewsradio.com.